Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. Yeah, so I just got done doing the Last of Us stream with Kyle, and I had said there wasn't going to be a show today, and I thought about it, and I said, you know what? It's the day after the Oscars. Of course, there has to be a show. So what I'm going to do, guys, is there's basically, quickly, there's going to be two main topics. I mean, the two biggest things that happened last night. And then I'm going to sprinkle in some other little nuggets for some stories. So the first one, okay. So Dwayne Johnson, okay, The Rock, was actually at the Oscars last night. He was a presenter. And so he actually was asked about the whole Black Adam. Black Adam, of course, was a film that came out, you know, last year, didn't do so hot. So it says that we put our best foot forward. Dwayne Johnson took a moment on the Oscar red carpet to reflect on the DC Universe Hall overhaul that put a pin in his plans for a Black Adam Superman crossover movie. Variety senior culture and events editor Mark Malkin caught up with Johnson and asked about Cavill's being dropped from DC Universe despite his highly touted comeback in Johnson's Black Adam. All that we can do when we were making Black Adam is to put our best foot forward and surround ourselves with the best people and deliver the best movie we could, he said. Our score was in the 90s. Critics took a couple shots, but that's the business of it. It's almost like when you have a pro football team and your quarterback wins championships and your head coach wins championships, and then a new owner comes in and says, not my coach, not my quarterback. I'm going to go with someone new. Johnson is, of course, referring to the new DC Studios bosses, James Gunn and Peter Safran, who were announced as the new architects of the DC Universe just a few days after Black Adam opened in theaters last October. And bringing back Cavill's Superman for a post-credit scene appearance, Johnson was laying the groundwork for his own DC Universe in which the relationship between Black Adam and Superman would be mapped out across multiple films. Black Adam's tepid box office and Gunn and Safran's hiring effectively killed Johnson's plan. James Gunn and I connected, and Black Adam will not be the first chapter of storytelling. However, DC and Seven Bucks, his production company, had agreed to continue exploring the most valuable ways Black Adams can be utilized in future DC multiverse chapters. So, essentially, the last thing he asked, he said, was this. We really wanted to craft a long form of storytelling and show that these two characters exist in the same universe and are going to deal with each other often, either on the same or opposite sides. Hopefully they clash at some point, and it's not just a one-fight situation. That was never our dream. That does not reward the fans. Fans want to see feel a journey and knowing these guys exist in the same universe. Okay, what do I have to say? Look, I get that it's a big thing, you know, but Gunn did the right thing here. I mean, what Johnson was trying to do is essentially shoehorn Henry Cavill in there, okay? And he made the wrong move, and it backfired. And I think that, you know, this should be a lesson to him, okay, to try and do things the right way. I understand it took a long time to actually have the movie made. I understand, you know, that he invested a lot in it, his time, his money, everything else. But at the same time, there was no reason for it. I feel bad for Henry Cavill, okay, because he was the lead on The Witcher, okay? And, you know, there were reports out there stating that he wasn't getting along with the writers and, you know, doing the character arc and everything else. But he was the lead. And he left that job because he was essentially promised by Dwayne Johnson, hey, look, if you come back to DC, we will take care of it. And as a result, you know, I mean, that was one of the main reasons why it got so much buzz, is because of that after credit scene. And now Cavill, you know, Gunn and Safran said, not so much. You know, and I'm sure he'll be back in some capacity, both of them will, but just not in the capacity that they want. The Rock's admitting he made a mistake, okay? Plain and simple. He's admitting he's made a mistake. And it is what it is. I knew that he wasn't going to take that big of a hit on it. But at the same time, you know, it's done and it's over with. I think everybody's moved on from it. But it was interesting. I will say one thing, though. It was interesting to get his take, because we had never really heard Dwayne Johnson's take on this, right? We had heard what we thought we would want to hear, but it finally came from the horse's mouth. And, you know, we'll see what happens from here. And I don't expect either one of them to be back anytime soon. You know, maybe a few years down the road, we'll see what happens. What do you guys think? Did Dwayne Johnson finally fess up and say, you know what? I wanted this and it didn't work out? Or, you know, are you guys still optimistic that both of them in some capacity will come back to DC? Or do you think that they're done with DC for good? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, let's move on to our second story. So we had, while there was a couple of big, big things happening last night, there was a big movie in the theaters that came out, and that was Scream 6. Scream 6 did very, very well, okay? And it scared up a $44 million debut this weekend. So this comes from Variety. Scream 6 collected $44.5 million in its opening weekend. A scary good start for Paramount. And Spyglass, long-running slashers series. Those ticket sales were enough to top the domestic box office over two newcomers. Sony's prehistoric sci-fi thriller 65, that was the one starring Adam Driver, and the focus features heartwarming comedy Champions, and that was with Woody Harrelson, as well as over last week's Victor, Creed 3. The initial haul for Scream 6 is frighteningly strong for the sixth installment. Not only did it greatly improve the start of last year's reboot, which scored a $30 million opening, but it crushed the series' opening weekend, set by the 2000 Scream 3 with $34 million, and Scream 5 cost $35 million. So this will easily turn a profit. It's extraordinary to have these type of results after six films, Paramount Pictures domestic distribution Chris Arianna said. We were blown away from the last opening of the Scream. That doesn't happen. The R-rated Scream 6 added another $22.6 million from 53 international markets, bringing its global tally to 67.1 million. Reviews and audiences scores are good, and international business should be solid. David A. Grossman, who runs a movie consulting firm, Franchise Entertainment Research, said, 27 years after launching in 1996, the franchise is healthier than ever. So it goes on to talk about the opening weekend numbers were slightly skewed for males, which were 51%, while 71% were between the ages of 18 and 24. So in second place was Creed 3, which scored $27.1 million, a 53% decline from last week's stellar $59 million debut. And after just two weekends on the big screen, the sports drama, starring and directed by Michael B. Jordan, has crossed over the $100 million mark. Based on current events, Creed 3 looks to end its theatrical run with approximately $150 million in North America, which is significantly higher and ahead of the first film, which had $109 million, and the second, $115 million. Internationally, Creed 3 has amassed $78 million, bringing its global total to $179 million. 65 landed in third place with $12 million and then went on to talk about that. But that film really, you know, that got some negative reviews and whatever else. This is huge. I got to be honest. This is huge for Scream. I remember this as a, you know, the original Wes Craven movie back in 1996 starring Drew Barrymore. Really, really good opening for it. I thought Creed 3 would be able to hang with it, but I was wrong. But nonetheless, this is big because my guess is, so this stars Jenna Ortega. Right now, she's one of the hottest actresses. That sounded wrong. She's one of the most popular actresses in Hollywood today. I mean, she's doing Wednesday. She's got this. She's got a couple of other projects lined up. So this is a really good start for Paramount and where this is going to be going. Creed did really well, which I was happy to see once again. And that made quite a bit of money in its second weekend, dropping 53%. This is going to be fascinating to see where this goes. This could be, and I'm just guessing, this could be another really big year for the horror genre. I mean, we had so many last year. You know, The Black Phone, Pearl, Barbarian, X. So this is only, and we're only in March. So this could definitely be, this is definitely good news for Paramount, but it's definitely good news for the whole genre. And I think that last year, the momentum was really there, and we're seeing this carry into 2023. Personally speaking, I was done with this genre a long, long time ago. I like horror films. Don't get me wrong. But it's just, as you know, I read in the piece, a lot of them were 18 to 24. So that tells me this is more of the younger generations type of film. And as long as this keeps turning a profit, they're going to keep making these movies. So I'm really curious to see where this goes, how long this could, you know, how much money this can make. I mean, look, Creed's already made $136 million in 2 weeks, so total. This could very easily do $150, $170 million by the time this is done. So I'm really curious to see what happens. What do you guys think? Let me know. Have you seen Scream 6? Did you like it if you did? Are you a fan of the Scream franchise? What did you think of the couple performances you saw in there? Would you be up for another Scream movie if they wanted to actually do that? Let me know your thoughts down in the comment section. Okay, so let's get to story number 3. And this is where the show, I mean, there were two big shows last night, and we had to choose. When I say we, Kyle and myself and everybody had to choose, was it going to be one show or the other show? So the first show I'm referring to is the season finale of The Last of Us. And The Last of Us was just a incredible, incredible show. I just watched it today. Matter of fact, I literally, by the time you guys watch this, you'll hopefully have seen the live stream that Kyle and I talked about The Last of Us and what our thoughts on it were. It was really good. Yeah, I mean, I played the game, so I kind of was, I don't want to say it was anticlimactic, but it was, as I said in the stream, there was a lot of gameplay in there. I mean, there were a lot of cutscenes. This shot here with the giraffe, and there was a whole other piece. They actually trained real giraffes for this. I didn't read the piece, and I was going to do it, but they actually trained real giraffes. I mean, there was a $10 to $15 million production budget on every single episode, and you could definitely tell where it went. So it was one of those things where it just worked. So this comes from Variety once again. And The Last of Us closed its first season with yet another triumph, with an audience of 8.2 million people for episode 9. This series broke its own viewership record, a significant feat considering that the finale was released during the ABC's telecast of the Oscars. So last week, I should say this, last week they actually put out HBO Max came out and said they got 8.1. So this was a little bit more than last week's episode. A combination of the Nielsen numbers and first-party data from Warner Brothers Discovery, this number accounts for those who tuned in to the Sunday night airing of HBO's cable channel, as well as streams on HBO Max throughout the night. WBD, Warner Brothers Discovery, also shared the first six episodes of the series are now averaging 30.4 million viewers, including ongoing viewership past initial airings, with episode one approaching 40 million total viewers in the weeks since its debut. Think about that, guys. 40 million people. That's incredible. What other show do you know that's going to get 40 million people to tune in? That just tells you something. You get good storytelling, production value all day long. In Europe and Latin America, The Last of Us has become the most watched show in HBO Max's history. This isn't the first time that The Last of Us has outdone itself while competing with a major award show. Episode 4, entitled Please Hold My Hand, brought in 7.5 million viewers when it aired at the same time as the Grammys, which was then a series high. Preliminary ratings for the Oscars are expected later Monday, and we're going to get to those in just a few minutes. When The Last of Us debuted in January, it trailed House of the Dragon to become the second most watched HBO premiere in over a decade with 4.7 million viewers. Think about that, too. 4.7 million viewers. That's incredible. I'm trying to think of something else that actually had almost 5 million people tune in for the series premiere. And I don't watch a lot of TV, but I can't imagine that they were really plugging this on doing spots. They might have, but, you know. So, let's see. Episode 2 marked the HBO's biggest ever increase between a series first and second episode with 5.7 million. That means they got an extra million people to tune in from episodes 1 to 2. And they were both slow. What I mean by that is they were telling the story of, they weren't bad episodes. They were slow and they were giving backstory. The show then brought in 6.4 million viewers with episode 3. So for Billstown, that's what it was called, or a long, long time, this, the Linda Ronstadt, it basically, that was, I think that was the best episode, myself. WB, Warner Brothers, also released new data about episodes 5 through 7, which was previously unavailable. Episode 5 was viewed by 11.6 million people, which, though impressive, Variety is not considering a series high due to its untraditional release. Because the episode's originally scheduled Sunday night airing was coincide with the Super Bowl, HBO opted to release it on the Friday, which I could completely understand. I mean, they were, you know, going to get smashed against the Super Bowl. Therefore, the figures point to viewership across the entire weekend from February 10th to 12th instead of one night. Episodes 6 and 7 were viewed by 7.8 and 7.9 million people, respectively. I know these are a lot of numbers, but this is necessary to go through. The most comparable series in terms of viewership has been season 1 of The House of the Dragon, which aired last year. And though The Last of Us hasn't managed to outperform House of the Dragon, the former has managed a steeper week-to-week trajectory than the latter. House of the Dragon season averaged 29 million viewers, a number that counts continual viewership past initial airings. Now, what I'll say is this. The reason why I think House of the Dragon did all those numbers is because that had many other seasons behind it, right? It's not like this was a brand new, out of the box, pristine series. There had been several other, there had been eight other seasons of Game of Thrones. So, and I think the combination of that, I think the combination of, I watched every episode. I did not care for season eight at all. People wanted to see what they were going to do. I think there were a lot of things. And it was streaming. You know, I think there were a lot of really, really important contributing factors to it. So, but yeah. So beginning with 4.7 million viewers and ending with 8.2 million. So think about that, guys. They gained through almost 3.7, almost 3.5 million viewers. The viewership of The Last of Us soared 75% throughout season one. That's incredible. That's incredible. By contrast, House of the Dragon was viewed by 10 million people with episode one, 10.2 million with episode two, and 9.3 for the season finale. So, and I'm going to stop reading because these are all numbers. I don't want to bore you guys. But the point is this, okay? This is unbelievable. The numbers this particular show did was uncanny. And it really goes to show you, too, about the story. Because even though the game, this will be the 10th year, 10th anniversary of The Last of Us. And it sold over, I think, 10 or 12 million copies. As a matter of fact, I think the PC, it's coming to PC in just a couple weeks. But nonetheless, this was just a remarkable turn of events. And I can't be happier. Not only for Neil Druckmann, not only for Craig Mazin, but now they've given a template to every single streaming service that's story-driven. So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the anticipation for season two is through the roof. I got to be honest. If they were smart, and they are all a bright bunch of people, I think you dropped something on the anniversary of The Last of Us Part Two. And that is, we're going to be doing a video on that. That'll be 3 years. That'll be out. It was released in 2020. I want to say it's June 27th. Don't quote me on that. But incredible, incredible stuff. As far as the episode is concerned, I really liked it. It was a lot of gameplay. As I said, cutscenes type of thing. I can't wait for season two. And by the way, I know I was talking with a couple viewers today. If you haven't played the second game, go play it. Hopefully you haven't been spoiled by now. But if you haven't, if you don't know it and you haven't, but go play it. I call it a perfect game. And I did a whole 4-part series on why. And you can find that, you know, you can find those videos there. It's a fascinating game. Anyway, guys, what do you think about this? What did you think about the viewership of this? Did you think that it could have done more because of the Oscars? Or did you think it had hit its high? And let me ask you this, guys. What do you think the ratings for season two is going to be? How many do you think they're going to get for the season premiere of that? Leave all your thoughts down in the comment section, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so we go from the one big event to another big event. And that's the Oscars. So there was a little show last night that handed out Academy Awards to some of the best filmmakers of the year. There was one movie that absolutely just crushed it. And there were a couple other movies that did pretty well, but there was a lot that was shut out. And So it's one of those things where, you know, I think that it's well, let's put it this way. It was a good show. I had a lot of fun with it. So this comes from Variety. History was made for the first time at the Academy Awards, thanks to the historic wins for Asian actress Michelle Yeoh and Ke-Huy Quan, along with costume designer Ruth Lee Carter, for becoming the first black woman to win two Oscars. So she won for Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. She actually had won for the first Black Panther as well. And Best Original Song, Nanu Nanu, made the first victory in the category for an Indian film. As expected, Everything Everywhere All at Once dominated with 7 wins. And All Quiet on the Western Front right behind with 4. In the meantime, Acclaim Pictures, Elvis, The Fabelmans, and Banshees, and Tar went home empty-handed, despite 30 wins among them. Variety breaks down the biggest snubs, and then they go into all of the snubs they think happen, and some of them. Okay, so as pictured here, okay, I have Austin Butler, All Quiet, and Angela Bassett. Let me get into a couple of these because I think they're necessary. Austin Butler. I think that his performance as Elvis was really good. It was really good. I think that his nomination was well-deserving. I thought it was a good movie. Not great movie. It never had a chance for Best Picture, even though we got nominated. The one thing going against Butler was this. He's only 33 or 34 years old. He would have been the 4th youngest ever to win the Academy Award. He was a first-time nominee. Right away, they don't like first-time nominees. They just don't, because they figure you'll be back. Elvis did not do well at all. I picked them in hair and makeup, lost that one. I picked them in costume, lost that one. That one I should have known was going to Ruth E. Carter. That was, but nonetheless, and congratulations to her, by the way. But nonetheless, so it lost that. It lost a couple others. So there was, once they started not choosing Elvis, the chances that I was going to get that right were going downhill. Angela Bassett, what can you say about this? I know Matthew Anderson, if you tuned into our live stream the other night, Matthew had chosen Carrie Condon. I chose Angela Bassett. Didn't win on that one. Even the set production. So, I mean, it was one of those things where I lost the set production. And so... yeah, so that was not good. Mandy Walker not winning for Elvis. I mean, there were a lot of nominations for Elvis, and he walked home with nothing. Now, that being said, All Quiet on the Western Front walked away with 4 or 5 Oscars last night. Fantastic job. I mean, Best International Film was, you know, pretty much a lock. I mean, but it walked away with, you know, Best Sound and a few others. And I started to see a path where this could do like a Mad Max Fury Road. Now, it didn't happen. But, you know, but the big winner of the night was Everything Everywhere All at Once. 7 Oscars. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'm so happy for everybody associated with this film. The Daniels, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michelle Yeoh, everybody. And it was really a groundbreaking film. So that was fantastic to see. I was sad. I was sad that Angela missed out on hers. But, you know, hopefully she'll be back. I was really glad they gave it to Michelle Yeoh over Cate Blanchett, because she's a 2-time Oscar winner. But yeah. So anyways, the reason I bring all of this stuff up is because the viewership of the Oscars went up 12%. Went up to 18.7 million. But still, it was one of the least watched Academy Awards ceremonies. And I think part of that, well, let me read the article and then I'll get to my thoughts in a minute. After a surprisingly eventful ceremony last year, the 2023 Oscars went on without a hitch. Everything Everywhere All at Once completed its awards season sweep with a whopping 7 trophies, including Best Picture, as well as 3 of the 4 acting categories. It was the Oscars' most awarded film in a decade. And audiences seemed to respond, if only slightly. The 95th annual ceremony brought in 18.7 million people, which was a 12% increase from last year, when the telecast captured 16.6. The telecast was also up 4 points for the demo rating compared to last year. Both ceremonies are still the least watched and lowest ratings in Oscar history, although the ratings have gone up quite significantly from the hostless one in 2021. Apparently, this was a very social Oscar affair, with the ceremony grabbing about 27.5 million total social interactions over the course of last night across Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. That's up about 5 million compared to last year, which is a bit of a surprise considering how buzzy the slap was. There was a possibility that the Academy nominating the 2 highest-grossing films of the year, Top Gun, Maverick, and Avatar: The Way of Water, for the top prize might be enough to stoke some interest in the year's show. It was the first time in a long time that any of the nods of the top prize reflected films that audiences, one, are actually watching. This had certainly worked in the past to an extent, and it could be one of the myriad reasons this year's ceremony saw an uptick in viewership. The most watched telecast in history was about 57 million, and that was the year Titanic was nominated in 1998. It went on to win Best Picture. Of course, that went on to win over 10 Academy Awards. But even before the pandemic, the Oscars were in a steady decline when it came to viewership. 2020's 23.6 million was nothing to bat an eye at, which just a few years earlier had doubled. So basically, it goes on to say, bringing back a tired and true host like Jimmy Kimmel could also have been positively impacted. The last time Kimmel hosted was 2017, 2018, and about 33 million watched in 2017 and dropped to 27 million in 2018. 2017 was the goof, the La La Land Moonlight snafu. The following year, Oscar viewership went nearly up to 30 million. That was the year Black Panther, which was a historic film that came in number 2 at the worldwide box office, grossing $1.3 billion, and was also nominated for Best Picture. So getting back to the premise, I think there was a couple of reasons why it did well, but still not there. Number one, I think that you had Kimmel back. That was helpful. Okay. I think number two, I think the races, I mean, there were a couple of races there that I think everybody wanted to see, right? Best actor and best actress. I think everybody had a feeling. I mean, they wanted to see Ke-Huy Quan win, okay? They were unsure what was going to happen with best supporting actress. And, you know, They really liked Everything Everywhere All at Once. So I'm happy it won 7. And we still haven't had a Big 5 winner, by the way. I always say it, but it's been 31 years since Silence of the Lambs won the Big 5. But this is the closest that any film has gotten. Okay? Best Picture, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Best Director. And even supporting actors not in that mix. And screenplay. I'm sorry, screenplay. Well, there was 2 of them. One went to EVOO, and the other one went to Women Talking. But yeah, I think that it's one of those things where this was a big thing. I'm glad the ratings were up. I think there were a lot of things, like I said. We'll see what happens next year. But, I mean, I think it will be interesting to see who they bring back as a host. You know, are they going to bring Jimmy Kimmel back? Go get, you know, Whoopi Goldberg or Billy Crystal if they want to do it. I mean, I had my problems with the show because it was only almost 4 hours. If you're trying to cut, look, if you're trying to cut back the time, eliminate the performances for original song. And I know that's not popular to say, but it's the truth. That's 15 or 20 minutes right out the door, right? Yeah, I don't know if anybody noticed, but every time they were doing an original song, they went to break because they had to clear the stage. You cut those out. You do it just like a normal Oscar. You know, you do a little clip, and that's it. I'm glad they brought the clips back, by the way. But the monologue, it was too long. It was too long. They had only given out 3 Oscars by 5:45 Pacific. And I know because I clocked it. They gave out the Del Toro Oscar for Best Animation, and they gave out Best Supporting Actor and Actress. That's it. And the other thing I saw, too, is there were 8. I counted 8 advertisements for Hulu. They were really shoving that down people's throats. And I know Disney, it's their thing, and, you know, other studios. I saw the Netflix commercial 2 to 3 times. I was shocked. The one thing I was shocked about, I was shocked we didn't see a Mission Impossible trailer. And I know Tom Cruise wasn't there. But still, I was shocked. And I think that would have been the place to do it. Now, I don't know where you put it. I mean, it comes out in July. You know. So, it will be interesting to see moving forward what they do and how they do it. But yeah. So that's it. That's the whole show. Pretty short, you know, show today. I figured it was the day after the Oscars, and it needed to have one. If you haven't already, go tune in to the live stream. Now it's not a live stream. It was last night of Matthew and I talking about the winners and what happened with that. And yeah, stay tuned, guys. We'll be doing more shows throughout the week. We get The Mandalorian on Wednesday, so stay tuned for that. And The Perfect Movies has already been up. It was up at the beginning of the month. And that is Heat, the 1996 film by Michael Mann, starring Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, John Voight, Tom Sizemore. So, yeah. So that's about it. And I will see you guys later. Do the 3 things you need to do. Be safe, be careful, and have a great day. All right. I'm David Steele, and this has been Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.